Okay, so today I hope to finish what was supposed to be the second half of yesterday's lecture.
Tomorrow
I will be free at last. Hallelujah. Writing some important references. Of course, there's actually an enormous literature on this subject, so I perhaps shouldn't list just three references because then I'm going to get 200 reference complaints. But these are references that I found perhaps very useful. So let me recall the motivation for studying this. We were studying symmetry-preserving brains. In rational conformal field theory. And the reasons for that were, first of all, that they were tractable examples of brains where we could study their geometry, and we'll see a little bit about their moduli space. They have nice semi-classical limits, as I'll show in a moment. And we can also, that also allows us to explore brains in the presence of non-trivial fluxes. As I mentioned last time, non-trivial fluxes and brains is of interest both for fundamental reasons and for phenomenological reasons. And finally, it ties into the general theme of these lectures because it allows us to compare D0 charge with twisted K theory. Okay, so last time I described the basic formalism for writing down examples of symmetry-preserving brains as boundary states in rational conformal field theory. And I concluded with a general procedure by which one can try and, quote, measure the shape of a brain. And I worked that out in the case of free field theory brains. And I'm going to essentially do the same thing here. Let me give you a little more of the outline of where we're going. What's the map? Well, we're going to compute the shape of WZW brains. And we're going to discover that they wrap Frelinda conjugacy classes. I'll define that term. Then that raises an interesting puzzle, which will be resolved by the so-called flux stabilization mechanism. And that leads to an even more interesting phenomenon, which is the so-called blowing up phenomenon of D0 brains, which will bring us to a paradox about D0 charge, or, well, let's say an interesting statement about D0 charge. And then I'll want to compare that with twisted K theory. So I'll explain one way of thinking about some of the implications of K theory as, well, the slogan is anomalies mod instantons. I'll explain that. And finally, that will allow me to compare for the twisted K theory of SU3. So let's get started with the shape of the brains. So let's begin with the SU2-WZW model. So we have SU2 level K. The irreducible representations are denoted Hj, with J as a spin going from 0 to K over 2 through half integer values. And as we know, this is a representation of an affine Lie algebra. It's bigraded, the grading being L0 and the Cartan subalgebra of the finite dimensional algebra. And the representations look a little like this. At the lowest value of L0, we have a spin J representation. In my notation, the states are going from m equals minus j to m equals plus j. And then we have descendants. Now, the characters of these representations have well-known modular transformation laws. And the modular transformation matrix is given by this formula. And I will be looking at brains in the closed theory given by the diagonal modular invariant. It's the simplest possible case. So our closed string Hilbert space is simply the tensor H tilde. So now let's study the symmetry-preserving brains with left equals right, with the automorphism omega set to 1. So the boundary condition is simply Jn on the left plus J minus n tilde on the right on the boundary state 0. Question? Okay. That is a tilde. Remember, my convention is tilde means right movers. Okay, and as I explained last time, we can form Cardy states. So these are sums of Ishibashi states, S J hat J over the square root of S0 J times the Jth Ishibashi state. And J hat here is just another label in that interval 0 to K over 2. Our question is, what is the shape? This is some algebraic thing I've written down, but I want to associate some geometry to it. Now, to speak of shape, we have to take a, in order to get any geometry at all, we have to have a large K limit. After all, the WZW Lagrangian looks like K times the trace of G inverse dG squared, plus and so on. So the effective string length is 1 over, well, the effective alpha prime is 1 over K. Now let's think a little bit about the large K limit just for the, you look puzzled, John. No? Okay. Let's think about the large K limit just in the closed string sector for a second. So what do these states correspond to in terms of vertex operators? Well, in the closed string, there are vertex operators of this type. And there are two important properties that they have. First of all, their conformal weight is JJ plus 1 over K plus 2. And secondly, if we take their operator product expansion, if we take a phi with a phi prime, the operator product expansion looks like z minus z prime to the delta minus delta prime plus delta double prime, cj double prime, jj prime, phi j double prime plus descendants. And I'm using rather schematic notation. These are Q Clebsch-Gordan coefficients. Okay, so if we take k goes to infinity at fixed j, what happens is the conformal weight goes to zero. So the z dependence on phi goes away. Moreover, the phis are then the Q-Klebs Gordon coefficients. I should have said Q, of course, is e to the 2 pi I over k plus 2. The Q-Klebs Gordon coefficients become ordinary Klebs Gordon coefficients, and the phis have an algebra which is precisely the same as the algebra of the Wigner functions as functions on the SU2 group manifold. Okay? So in the large K limit, what's going on is that H closed, in some sense, which could certainly be made a lot more precise, in some sense is going to L2 functions of the group manifold times oscillators. Now, the reason I'm telling you about this is that to compute the shape of the brain, if you... Absolutely not. No. All functions. These are... My notation here, I should say, is that these are the matrix elements of the unitary irreps. Now, why am I telling you about this? Because I want to compute the shape of the Cardy state. And if you think about the procedure I outlined last time, what we wish to do is we wish to make a little localized closed string state and then take its overlap with the Cardy state and see where the Cardy state actually has an overlap with a localized string state localized near a group element G. Okay, so having said this, I will make a state in the closed string Hilbert space localized near G by simply taking 2j plus 1 dj m left m right of G star times the vertex operator or state in the closed string space given by that. So that's my definition of G, and this is living in H closed. Now let's compute the overlap. Okay? So to compute that, we need to know what is the overlap of G with an Ishibashi state. And as I explained last time, the Ishibashi state, when we regard this...
So your previous formula, I can understand, is the image of the delta function under the Peter Weyl?
Precisely. Except, I don't want to get too much into this because it's a very interesting and important discussion, but it would take away a lot of time. It's not exactly localized because J is only running up to K over 2. It's approximation to within a string length, and the string length is 1 over the square root of K. right. So we want to compute this overlap. We will therefore first compute the overlap with the Ishibashi state. Recall that the Ishibashi state is to be thought of as the unit operator when we regard this as a Hom of Hj to Hj. Okay, and translated back into the closed string language, the Ishibashi state is the sum over M of Jm tensor Jm tilde plus descendants. So therefore, it's clear that the overlap of G with the Ishibashi state is the square root of 2j plus 1 times the character in the spin j representation of g. Now, to make some further progress, let's choose some coordinates on the SU2 manifold. So I'll choose polar coordinates. So this is the angle psi. The group element will be e to the I psi Pauli matrix dot unit vector. So this is an S2 of radius equals sine psi. In these coordinates, this is 2j plus 1. This is 2j plus 1 sine 2j plus 1 psi over sine psi. Okay, now you put a few facts together. They're all on the board. G overlap with the Carty state is the sum over J of the square root of 2J plus 1 over S0J of sine of 2J plus 1 times psi hat, which I'll define, sine 2J plus 1 times psi over sine psi, where psi hat is pi times 2j plus 1 over k plus 2. So this term came from the modular S matrix. Okay, this term came from the character. This is part of the sum over the Ishibashi states. Now, at large k, two things happen. At large k, the quantum dimension, S0j, becomes the classical dimension. So this goes to 1. And here I have a sum of a product of sine, sum over j, and that becomes a delta function localizing psi near psi hat. So at large k, this goes like k to the 1/4 times 1 over sine psi times the delta function of psi hat minus psi. Okay? And the conclusion is that these Carty states are brains wrapping the Frelinda conjugacy classes with psi hat equals pi times 2j plus 1 over k plus 2. Okay. Now, before proceeding, I want to make a couple of remarks on this. Let me skip to remark 2 in view of the time. And let me say that this computation can be generalized to SU2 mod U1 parafermions. And there the picture is this. The closed string theory is a disk. The disk has metric d rho squared plus rho squared d phi squared over 1 minus rho squared. That's not a misprint. It's not the Poincaré metric. Rho is less than or equal to 1. And the string coupling is 1 over the square root of 1 minus rho squared. Now, if we take the omega equals 1 brains, then they have the following description. There are 2k special points around the boundary of the disk related to those for the rational torus that I mentioned last time. And the A brains, are straight lines in this disk. Then you can change omega not 1. I shouldn't have shaded this in, because the omega not equal to 1 brains, or a class of omega not equal to 1 brains, turn out to be little subcopies of the parafermion disk itself. And this is not exactly along my general theme, so I'm not going to elaborate on that. But that's in the paper with Juan and Nadi in great detail. Okay. Remark three is that the story I just told you generalizes in a straightforward way to G, which is a compact, connected, simply connected Lie group. And the result is that the Cardy states are labeled by integrable representations of G hat level K. So they live in the Weyl alcove. And that G overlap lambda hat is localized on the Frohlinda conjugacy class, which I'm defining right now, which is the set of H exponential of 2 pi I lambda hat plus rho over k plus h dot h inverse. Rho is the Weyl vector and h is Dole-Coxeter number. Now, fourth remark is that lambda hat is in the closed string space. Question? Sorry. That is the Dole-Coxeter number, and that is a vector of diagonal matrices which form a basis for the dual for the Cartan subalgebra.
And the other
H? My God. L. L inverse, sorry. Okay. Is it clear now?
Yeah.
Okay. Natural generalization of that up there. Okay. Now, these Cardy states are elements of the closed string state space. And the latter is a representation of G left times G right, just for the finite dimensional group. So, of course, we can act on these states with rho left of G left, rho right of G right. And it's a very simple exercise. You can easily imagine how it goes to do the shape calculation for this. And of course, these wrap the set G left O lambda hat K G right in G. So these are not symmetry preserving brains with respect to omega equals 1. They'll simply look like brains something like this. They'll be rotated. And all I've done here is make a rigid rotation on these brains. What they are wrapping are called twinned conjugacy classes. In general, if little omega is an automorphism of G, then O, the conjugacy class twinned by omega, is the set of H, G, omega of H inverse, H running over G. Now, in this particular case, these twinned conjugacy classes are just related by an inner automorphism. Correspondingly, the boundary conditions that are satisfied by these brains are of the following type. I've simplified it a little bit. by just taking one g left, g right equals 1, g left not 1. So you can easily check for yourself that this is a true equation. And here you see we're allowing for this automorphism omega. So the lesson is that continuous families of automorphisms lead to moduli spaces of brains. The final remark on this calculation is that one can, of course, also consider outer automorphisms. Okay, and then you can certainly form a capital omega for an outer automorphism, and what you'll get are twinned conjugacy classes for these outer automorphisms. And these are conjugacy, these are manifolds, submanifolds of a different dimension from the standard conjugacy class. Let me just give a simple example. SUN has an outer automorphism, which is complex conjugation. The twin conjugacy class in this case would be HGH transpose, H in SUN. And for example, if we put G equals 1 and take SU3 and take SU3, we get a five-dimensional manifold, which is a very interesting five-dimensional manifold, which I'll say more about later. Okay, is that clear? We're going on to the next section. Okay, well, this picture of brains wrapping Berlinda conjugacy classes immediately leads to an interesting physical paradox, which is the following. These conjugacy classes are homologically trivial inside the group manifold. After all, those two spheres clearly are bounding a little piece of a little cap on the North Pole. Okay? Now, I'm claiming that the Cardi state corresponds to a brain wrapping over this submanifold. Now, the brain has energy per unit volume. Tension is energy per unit volume. Okay? So therefore, the energy of that brain is tension times the volume of O. And clearly, it wants to contract. On the other hand, I won't show you the details, but if you analyze the open string sector, the open strings that begin and end on this brain, which you can do with this rational conformal field theory formalism, you find that they're stable. They're completely stable. So what gives? Well, the resolution. Yeah, even in, no. Oh, I see, you mean the bosonic tachyon.
Yeah.
Yes, let us do the supersymmetric case. The supersymmetric case is just like the bosonic case with a shift of level by k to k plus h. So it's easy to forget that. Pardon? And yes, right. Yeah, you could also do it that way. I agree. It's clear there's a problem. Sorry?
If it's a conformal field theory, there is no dipole.
Well, you don't have to work this out because it's been resolved by Backus, Douglas, and Schweigert. And the resolution is very pretty. Brains we have a brain wrapping these conjugacy classes, but brains also carry a gauge field. Okay, and therefore there's a line bundle L over that conjugacy class. And the idea is that if C1 of L is not zero, then there must be non-trivial magnetic field strength. And the energy in that magnetic field strength will go up as the conjugacy class shrinks. And so you have a force of the opposite sign. So if we take the example of O equals S2 sitting in the SU2 manifold, and we let F have first turn class, if we let L have first turn class N with N non-zero, then an easy calculation shows that the integral of F star F, the energy in the electromagnetic field, goes like N squared over R squared, if that's a sphere of radius R. So the total energy is equal to T times R squared plus N squared over R squared. And you see that we're going to stabilize at a discrete value of R, and therefore at a discrete value of psi. Now, in fact, if you analyze the exact Dirac Born-Enfeld action, it's a little different from this naive estimate. What you're really minimizing is sine to the fourth psi plus pi n over k. That is from the field strength plus the B field, which in these coordinates looks like this. So you're minimizing this expression, and this is stabilized at psi equals pi n over k. That's beautiful. That means that we have the following picture for what a Cardy state corresponds to. So the summary, and here I'll generalize it to all groups, is that lambda hat Cardy equals, in the semi-classical limit, a single brain wrapping O of lambda hat k with Chan-Payton line bundle C1 of lambda hat, which is equal to lambda hat plus rho, where I'm identifying this regular conjugacy class with G mod T, and I'm identifying its cohomology with the weight lattice. And then the electromagnetic field strength is stabilizing the tension. And that's for general G. Now, I haven't actually done the energy analysis, but by considerations of the D0 charge that I'm about to come to, it's clear that this has to be the answer. Anyway, what else could it be? If pardon?
The brain at the equator?
Sorry, I can't understand you.
Where is the equator here?
Oh.
The
equator, I think, is about J equals K over 4. So maybe that's not your answer, your question. So psi hat is pi times 2J plus 1 over K plus 2. Psi is going from 0 here to psi equals pi here. Okay. Does that answer the question? Yeah.
So there is presumably another brain at the equator which doesn't carry any class, which is unstable.
Another brain down here?
No, at the equator, without class.
Without flux, yeah. I don't. If it's without flux, I would think it's unstable. It just doesn't correspond to a Cardy state. What I've done here is I've interpreted geometrically what a Cardy state means. Okay, that was the easy part. All right, so now we're going to get to some more difficult issues having to do with the zero brain charge. So are there any other questions before we go on? No. They are the full set. Well, of course, I could take integer combinations, but they are the full set of symmetry-preserving boundary state conditions.
So what about physically, do you expect the brain to be on the possible brain to sit on the equator?
That's unstable. That's just not a symmetry-preserving boundary state. Right. There are lots and lots of boundary states. I said there are too many. Let's simplify our life by considering rational conformal field theories and symmetry-preserving boundary states. There are lots of brains. Okay.
That's not a symmetry-preserving.
Apparently, I would. I mean. Are you thinking of the B brains? The three-dimensional brains, or? Then I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean, Ilka, because I have just interpreted that as a brain on the on the equator with a flux. Okay. No, that's the point. We've simplified. I mean, what am I doing in these lectures? First, I throw away everything, or almost everything, and then I win. Okay, now I'm putting a little bit back, okay, and I still win. But can I go further? Well, we don't. I mean. Okay, so now I want to talk about the zero charge. Okay, so now I'm going to put the WZW model in a type 2 string background. So let's imagine that our CFT looks like some Minkowski space with a Feig and Fuchs term possibly times WZW for G. And the example of this, of course, is SU2 level K, which is the throat region of K5 brains. Now, type 2A theory has D0 brains and Ramond-Ramond 1 forms. And we know that if a brain wraps some world volume of the type W times R, R is for time, then there's a Vesemino term on the brain, which is a one form, and it couples to the trace of e to the f plus b, square root of a hat, et cetera, et cetera. So that leads to the well-known phenomenon that if you have a Chan-Peyton bundle with a non-trivial first turn class, then it induces D0 brain charge. Now, we have seen that these conjugacy classes must have a non-trivial first turn class for their Chan-Peyton line bundle. So that means that they must carry some kind of D0 brain charge. But what that D0 brain charge is going to be extremely confusing. And I'm going to try and understand what it is. Now, the first argument, I'll give you one argument based on boundary conformal field theory, and then I'm going to check it at the end of the talk with K-theory. Okay, so here's the argument based on boundary conformal field theory. This is essentially, I believe the reference for this is Alexeyev, Recknagel, and Shomerez. Which is the blowing up phenomena. Now, I'm going to attempt to give you a state, to give the mathematicians a statement they can at least understand at a heuristic level. Forget about a proof, okay? But I'll try and give you a statement you can understand. The idea is, here's the group, okay? And it has this H flux, K times X3. X3 is my notation for the integral generator with Z coefficients. I'm going to put up here at G equals 1, I'm going to put n D0 brands. Well, let me turn it upside down if you don't mind, since there's more room down here. I'm going to put n D0 brands. Okay? And the claim is that this configuration is unstable and blows up to a single brain wrapping a conjugacy class with a non-trivial first Jern class, a line bundle of the type I described before. With C1 of L hat. Well, I'm coming to that in a second. Now, first, I have to tell you one very important thing, which is there are n D0 brains, and there's a conjugacy class with a representation lambda here. And the idea is that at least for one much less than lambda hat, less than k, n should be the dimension of lambda hat. Okay, now, I said I'm not going to prove it, but let me at least indicate some justifications for this statement.
If you know the boundaries get contiguous, look at the Ramon-Ramon charge and find the
difference. Nice question. What you seem to get, as far as I can tell, are quantum dimensions of the group, of the representation. You get the Q dimension and not the dimension. Why is the D0 brain charge a Q dimension? Very interesting question. I don't know the answer. There's some extremely interesting puzzle to resolve there. What Ashok is pointing out is that why don't I just evaluate this integral and have done with it? After all, that's how I motivated it's having the zero brain charge. And he's quite right. I have a formula for F. I have a formula for B. I could put W equals O. I could do the integral. As you know, the Pontryagin classes are all zero. So that's easy. A hat is 1. We could do the integral. And the integral is not completely trivial for higher rank, but I believe it's just the quantum dimension of lambda hat.
You start out by saying you have a line bundle on this plane.
Uh-huh.
To you, I suppose that what we have is a trivialization of the B field, not
yeah.
The alignment. So what exact calculation are you doing there?
Okay. So what I do is I choose a patch near G equals 1, and I trivialize the H flux on that patch in the group manifold. And there's a rather nice formula for the B field here. When the B field restricted to O, it's equal to the sum over positive roots of psi dot alpha minus 1/2 of sine of 2 psi dot alpha times the 2 form E alpha wedge E minus alpha. So you have a formula like that for the B field. And you also know what the first turn class is. So you can do the integral. So you can do the integral. And it's just a puzzle.
You could also compute the overlap for the Saunders term.
Well, you'll get exactly the same thing. You could also compute the overlap of the Cardy state, the Ramon-Ramon vertex operator, and you'll get exactly the same thing. Because that overlap is just how you derive that integral, basically. Okay. But I'm going to argue that instead the D0 brain charge is not a Q number, but is an integer modulo some n. So it's a torsion number. Okay, so what are the justifications? And the first argument, there are going to be two arguments. The first argument is based on the blowing up phenomenon. So let me give some justifications for this. So as David was just suggesting, at least for G equals SU2 level K, this is U dual to the Myers effect. And for me, that's convincing enough, so I'm sure it's right. The second argument is based on an effective quantum mechanics for D0s in G with the H flux. It's in the Alexeyev Rechnogel Shomarev papers. I'm not going to review any of these. But the third argument is based on Affleck and Ludwig's work on RG flows in the Kondo model. And that leads to a mathematically well-defined statement, a non-trivial mathematically well-defined statement about what this might mean. But again, in the interest of time, I'm going to leave that out. If you're interested, I'm happy to explain it afterwards. I just want to say that there are some justifications for this picture. I want to accept this picture and move on. Okay. So let's just accept this. So then, if we accept this, then there are two notions of D0 brain charge. At least two notions of D0 brain charge. On the one hand, there's naive D0 brain charge. That's this integer n, which is the dimension of the representation lambda hat. On the other hand, I'm saying that that brain is a singly wrapped brain, and there are only finitely many integrable representations. For G hat level K. That's the Weyl alcove. For SU3, it would be some set of points like that. So let's postulate that the true D brain charge, D0 charge, is the naive charge mod some integer which depends on the group and the level. If you accept this postulate, then I will determine n by a simple argument. Absolutely. I'll explain exactly how in the K-theory section. John is saying that little n, that if D is equal to 0 modulo little n, then the charge is 0. So does that mean that those D0 brains can annihilate to nothing? The answer is yes, and I will show you the mechanism by which that happens. But now I want to determine N for some simple groups. Let's, of course, consider G equals SU2 first. And let's make the following observation. Okay, here is our SU2 group manifold. And here's our Philinta conjugacy class, O sub J K. Let's consider the conjugacy class for K over 2 minus J K. These conjugacy classes are related by a rotation. In fact, it's as sets in the SU2 group manifold, if I multiply O by minus 1, which as I explained before is just a rotation, that's equal to OK over 2 minus JK. Now, since these brains are related by a rigid rotation, they must have the same charge. Rigid rotation cannot change a charge. Okay, now to get the formulas right, I need to address one subtlety. If I consider, let's orient these brains. If I rotate this brain, you see I get a brain of the other orientation. So this is the Philinta conjugacy class. This is the rotated brain. So therefore, N is determined as follows, minus D of K over 2 minus J must be equal to D of J mod N of SU2 K. Well, that's easy to work out. This is equal to 2J plus 1 minus K plus 2. And this is equal to 2J plus 1. And therefore N of K, N of K is equal to K plus 2. Yeah. I'm about to generalize to SUN, and I don't know the other cases. No, excuse me, I do know the other cases. I'm about to generalize for any. I will generalize the formula for little n to SUN. I'll generalize the idea to any group. Okay, so what is the generalization? So there's a famous isomorphism between the center of a group and the automorphisms of the extended Dinkin diagram. Okay, so for example, for SUN, the extended Dinkin diagram is a circle of n points, and the automorphisms of the extended Dinkin diagram are rotations, that's Zn, that's also the center of the group. Now, the extended Dinkin diagram acts on the integrable representations. It acts on the Chevalier generators, and therefore it acts on the Dinkin labels. Excuse me, the automorphisms of the extended Dinkin diagram act on the integrable representations. So these act, this is called in the physicist literature spectral flow. So for example, for SU2, J goes to K over 2 minus J, and for SUN, the Dinkin labels A1 through AN minus 1 goes to K minus the sum of AI, A1 up to AN minus 2. Now, a pleasant fact about this isomorphism is that if you take a Philinta conjugacy class and you multiply it, you rotate it by an element of the center, then you get the Philinta conjugacy class for the transformed representation lambda. Now again, that is just a rigid rotation. So that implies that D of lambda hat prime is minus 1 to the rank D of lambda hat mod N of G cap. That answers your question, Eric.
The question
of that automorphism
could find
the automorphism
of the
original. Oh, dear me.
Sorry. Yeah, maybe. Should I say outer automorphisms of the Dinkin diagram? Okay. Yeah, okay, let me recover. I can definitely recover from this. Eric, Ezra, for Zn, okay, for Sun and Zn, Zn is the center of the group, and Zn is also a group of automorphisms of the extended Dinkin diagram, okay, and in that case, I'm absolutely sure this is true. And you've now got me worried about the general case. I understand what he's complaining about. Fine. Look, let's not get into Bourbaki here. Let's just restrict to SUN with ZN. Yes.
What happens for SO when you have
two? I don't know. Okay. The center acts as a group of automorphisms on the integrable representations. Okay, now I am certain that what I've written is correct. Yes?
This statement is true for any D.
Is there, yeah?
One comment in physics is, so here we see that N Dior brands come together in a monolith.
Yeah.
Very often something like this WZW model will appear in, like, say, the background of an N5 brand.
Oh, yeah.
There's product spaces. When you look at the total structure, then the Z brain is disappearing.
I gave a whole lecture on that at the Avatars conference. Right, I'll mention that. That's true. Right, so where were we? Sorry to mess up the group theory. What I've written here is correct, and this is the generalization of what I drew for SU2. I just want to say one more thing about this relation right here, which is that it's a very non-trivial arithmetic condition if you start to write out, say, the vowel product formula for the representations of SUN. Now, a solution is N of SUN K equals K plus N over GCD of K plus N, least common multiple of 1 to up to N minus 1. Now, this crazy formula for little n was arrived at by a different set of arguments by Friedenhagen and Schomerus. These arguments that I've given you are definitely different. They're just based on this rigid rotation of the brain, but their crazy formula for little n works for our argument too. And for example, for SU3, n of k is just k plus 3 for k even, and k plus 3 over 2 for k odd. I'm having trouble with chalk here. Okay. Okay. Let me summarize this section. Okay, the physical arguments have suggested that the D0 brain charge group is Z modulo N of KZ. That's one point. And another point, which I want to mention, is that, well, if we have this single cyclic group, it's important to bear in mind that not all charges need be populated. And some charges can be populated more than once. And a good example of that is already SU3 for k equals 2. Then here's the vial alcove. There are these points here. In the vial alcove, Q is equal to Z mod 5Z. But the charges, which are the dimensions modulo 5, are just 0, 3, 3, 3, 1, and 1. So you see charge 2 and charge 4 in principle could have been there, but aren't. That's important because some people have gotten confused thinking about D-brain charge groups by assuming that if you have a cyclic group, then all the charges have to be populated. Okay, that's the end of that section. Now I'm going to turn to K-theory. Yeah?
Suppose you start with 2D0 brains, and what happens?
Pardon? I think they just stay as 2D0 brains. There's nothing for them to decay to. There's no two-dimensional representation. It's very funny, I agree. How could they? Right. Right. I think that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, I think there are a lot of interesting issues to explore here. Like, that's a good example. If you start thinking about what this charge group means, you'll find, I think, some interesting things. Thanks, Bert. Okay, now I'd like to compare this with twisted K-theory. The referent of this is the charge group, Q equals Z mod N of KZ. Now, general arguments suggest that the group of D-brain charges in the presence of H-flux is KH of X. And as I mentioned in lecture 2, when H is torsion, good arguments for that were given by Frieden-Witten and Kapustin. And it was suggested that even when H is non-torsion, it's still relevant by Brochnest and Mattei. Well, the first question that comes up is, what is KH of X? Okay, and already that's not completely trivial to define. Now, in lecture 2, I defined it as the algebraic K group of sections of a bundle of H-twisted algebras. I was talking about topological, 2D topological field theory, but the ideas I was discussing easily generalize. And there's also a Fredholm model, but I'm going to take a different point of view. I'm going to take a point of view which is what I was advocating in the beginning of my talk at the Avatars conference here a few weeks ago. Now, I don't want to repeat all of that. So I'll just summarize the basic lesson that we got from the beginning of that talk, which we'll need to have our comparison. So what I showed there is that there are two rules for answering the question, if space-time is x9 times r, the r is for time, what spatial cycles W in x9 can a D-brain rep? Okay, and I gave two rules. Rule A is that you can wrap only if capital W3 of W plus the H flux restricted to W is zero in H3 of WZ. Capital W3 is the third integral Stiepel-Whitney class. And rule B is brain wrapping W that's little w. This is little w3. And if you apply the mod 2 Bachstein to it, little w2, if you apply the mod 2 Bachstein to it, you get capital w3.
That's zero.
Absolutely true. But it's an integral class. Brain wrapping w can be unstable if there exists a W prime in X9 such that the Poincaré dual of W in W prime is equal to this combination of classes for W prime. No, H could be a non-trivial Durand cohomology class.
H is BD in quotes, but
is H BD?
I think what you're saying is H a flat H field, and the answer is definitely no. No, it's not torsion. Absolutely, that's the point. H is any integral class, any integral 3 class. And so H is not globally DB.
In your second talk, there was a B in
H2 and W. That's true. And in that case, I had a flat. In that case, H was torsion. So there it came from H2 with E1 coefficients, but that was a special case. Okay, let me explain where these conditions come from. Condition A is just anomaly cancellation. A la Frieden-Witten. And condition B is also closely related to Frieden-Witten, and that's what I call the instanton decay. And that goes like this. Here's the justification of B. Here's time. Here's space. Okay. Suppose that W prime exists such that this combination of classes is non-zero. Okay? Let's consider that cycle W prime at a fixed time, t naught. I will now wrap a D-brain instanton on that cycle. Now you can complain. You can't do that because there are anomalies. So I will need to cancel the anomalies. We can cancel the anomalies with a magnetic source on W if W satisfies this condition. So I can cancel the anomalies if I have a magnetic source on that W, if the Poincaré dual of W and W prime is equal to that combination of cohomology classes. Morally speaking, this is equal to D of F. This is D of F equals J. This is the current, which is trivializing the anomaly. Now, how do I get a magnetic source on W? I get a magnetic source on W by having a D-brain ending on W. D-brains ending on D-brains give magnetic sources. This, you see, is codimension 3. So I'll have a D-brain whose world volume is W times time, which tootles along in time and bumps into this D instanton and disappears. So that means it decayed. It lives for time less than T naught, and it does not exist after T naught, and therefore the D brain has disappeared due to instantons, D brain instantons. So that's the meaning of condition B. Okay? Now, in my avatars talk, I discussed at length how this condition is related to the Atiyah-Herzberg spectral sequence for the computation of twisted K theory. And one thing I pointed out is that the condition of canceling anomalies and then quotienting by instantons is a little bit stronger. It's very closely related to the Atiyah-Herzberg spectral sequence, but it's actually a little bit finer than the Atiyah-Herzberg spectral sequence. And that's going to be exactly the thing that allows us to calculate KH of SU3. Before I do KH of SU3, especially in view of some of the questions, let me just mention that for SU2, KH1 of SU2 is easily computed this way or by the Atiyah-Herzberg spectral sequence to be Z mod KZ. The mechanism there is that in the presence of a five-brain geometry, you have a three-sphere which links the five-brain. Okay, so here's your NS5-brain, K-NS5-brain. There's a three-sphere which links it. It has an H-flux. It's the SU2 level K model. And K-D0-brains terminate on that D instanton, on that D2 brain instanton. And that's the physical explanation of that torsion, of the fact that the zero brain charge group is torsion. Okay, so I was going to discuss that later. Why is it K instead of K plus 2? Because here I'm doing the supersymmetric SU2 model. That means that the K, the geometric K in the action, which I'll call K sub supersymmetric, is related to the K of the WZW model where I've decoupled the fermions from discussion plus 2. So my previous analysis was purely in WZW theory, not taking into account the fermions. And I predicted torsion KWZW plus tau, and the K theory, which is a space-time argument, predicts torsion, which is K supersymmetric. And this, of course, generalizes to SUN. K supersymmetric is K SUN WZW plus N. Okay, so let me finish up by saying a few words about SU3. That formula, but well, okay. Okay, so what about SU3? So let me just tell you a few things about the geometry of SU3. SU3 has integral cohomology, which is generated by X3 and X5. And in the Rom theory, X3 is trace of G inverse dG cubed, and X5 is trace of G inverse dG to the fifth, with some well-known coefficients. Now, if you try and compute K star H of SU3, via the Atiyah-Hertzbrook spectral sequence, then what you'll do is you'll get as far as the E3 term, and E3 even will be Z sub K mod S, and E3 odd will be Z of K mod S, where S is some integer dividing by K. And you can go that far because the differential is known. D3 is square 3 plus the cup product with H.
You just get Z mod K.
No. Oh, sorry. You get Z mod K. You're right. You get Z mod K. But we don't know the differential D5. And therefore, we can only conclude that K naught sub H is Z mod K over S. And K1 sub H is Z mod K over S. Now let's, so I don't know what to do with the HSS, because I don't know D5. You can also try Meyer-Vittoris sequences, and the only ones I could think of lead to ambiguous answers of that kind. Okay, for the Atiyah-Hertzbrook spectral sequence for twisted K theory, there's an old paper from the 80s by Jonathan Rosenberg in the context of C star algebras. Okay. And he actually wrote down this differential without the square 3.
And that's the H
coefficient? No. His H was definitely not torsion. He actually computed the case of SU2 level K. The differential D3 plus H cup was written down in a paper. Sorry, Emmanuel. That I wrote about a year ago with Emmanuel Diaconescu and Edward Witten, where it was just very natural, given what we knew about Frieden-Witten and it was essentially based on Frieden-Witten, but we put it together. And there are also, there's certainly an unpublished paper of Atiyah and Siegel. Well, that's not, well, yeah, I guess that's true. They also justify this, and does the, Dan, am I missing a reference? Is it in your papers?
No.
It's extremely natural given the anomaly cancellation, but.
There is an interference spectral sequence for any cohomology theory,
although there's a homotopy theorist on how to do it with twisted cohomology theory. Yeah, but that's not as easy as it sounds. That's not in literature. I mean, certainly Emmanuel and I took that point of view, but let's not, and didn't succeed. Let's not get too far into that. I want to proceed by, so this is the third differential from many points of view. I want to proceed, since it doesn't work, who cares anyway? So I want to proceed by thinking instead about this way of looking at things. So let's do that. So let's try and compute K1H of SU3. Now, in zeroth approximation, this is just the odd cohomology. So this is H3 plus H5. Yeah. It's not obvious that they're the same, and that's why I'm working so hard to test it. Okay, I'm claiming that it's not. I'm claiming that it's not obvious when H is not torsion that they're the same. And what I have done by showing you the physics of A and B is that it's obvious that the charge groups are the same as far as the third differential of the Hertzberg spectral sequence. Now, one can guess that they're actually exactly the same, and that's why it's worth thinking about it some more. Anyway, it's an interesting computation because it's another way of computing the K-theory. So let's think about what these correspond to in terms of wrapped brains. So let's start by thinking about the Poincaré dual of X5. Okay, the Poincaré dual of X5 is just any typical SU2 subgroup of S3. Now this has H-flux on it, so I can't wrap a brain. I can't wrap a three-dimensional brain on that SU2 submanifold. When I say wrap a brain, I mean wrap a free brain with nothing else ending on it. So this is out. And that corresponds to the case that D3 D3 of X5 is not zero. So it doesn't live into the cohomology. What's the Poincaré dual of X3? Well, it's some 5-cycle. But what that 5-cycle is a little bit subtle. And we were very proud of ourselves because we figured out what that 5-cycle was, and it doesn't seem to have been known to various experts. So the Poincaré dual of X3 can be represented by a 5-manifold, M5 in SU3, which is just the twinned conjugacy class of the identity. It's the set of GG transpose with G and SU3. And that's the same as the set of symmetric SU3 matrices. And from this representation, one can see that it's also a homogeneous space. Now, the interesting thing about this space is that X3 restricted to M5 is a representation of capital W3, and so M5 is not spin C. Okay? Now, if W wraps M5 R times, then the anomaly cancellation says that 0 is R KW3 plus W3. As various people were mentioning, W3 is 2 torsion. And so this implies that R is 0 mod 2 when K is even. Here? No, this is the point. The point is that H is restricting to K times W3. Okay. So therefore, we have to wrap an even number of times when K is even. On the other hand, we always have the D8 instantons, which wrap SU3 times R, meaning that the D6 instanton number, sorry, the D6 charge, is only defined modulo K. So this argument shows that if the K group agrees with the charge group, then the K group must be K1H of SU3 is Z mod KZ when K is odd, and 2Z for twice wrapping mod KZ when K is even. And a similar argument shows that K0H of SU3, which I'm not going to go through, but again gives okay, so I've made the, so that will give agreement.
You're not claiming that was a computation of the topological K theory.
I'm saying that if the topological K theory and the D0 charge group agree, then, as we believe they should be, then this is what the topological group should be. I gave you a different argument based on worldsheet methods and boundary conformal field theory. I'm now showing you that that coincides with a space-time picture based on D-brain instantons. Okay, I want to conclude because I'm running into lunch now. Okay, so let me conclude. So a comparison with my original outline shows that there can be a difference between theory and experiment. The original outline had today's lecture one on K-theory and string field theory. I was even going to give a few sentences overview, but in view of the time, I'm just going to totally skip it. And lecture 5 dealt with what Eric Timo was just referring to, that in what we see is that in a five-brain background, we encounter this as the D0 brain charge group. Does that mean that the group of the D0 brain charge group is really Z mod KZ, or and the answer turns out to be complicated, and the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no, in the wider context of M theory. And that's a very complicated story, which is under investigation right now, and so I'm not going to go into it. but I said what I know about it in the Avatars conference. So I just want to conclude now by formulating loosely what I think is a good problem for the not too distant future. Where do we want to go from here? Well, the arguments for K-theory as a deep brain charge group apply at long distance with respect to the string scale and G string equals zero. We would like to formulate a precise notion of D brain charge, or of brain charge. And I most definitely do not just mean D brain charge, I mean brain charge, which is applicable when G string is not zero at length scales which can be comparable to the string scale, and in the presence of NS and Ramon-Ramon fluxes. And I think it should be a very interesting generalization of the mathematical structure known as K-theory, and it might lead to some very interesting new mathematics. Thank you. In 1 minute. Lecture four was divided into two pieces. Part one was arguing that in the alpha prime goes to zero limit, the star algebra of string field theory splits into a tensor product of factors along the lines that of a paper of Witten's from a year ago, where A1 in general is some C star algebra, and A0 is the P equals zero part of the star algebra, and then trying to think about how that fits in with our picture of, with the picture from non-commutative geometry of D brains as projection operators in C star algebras, in particular for the torus and for orbifolds. There's been some work on that. I'm sure that overlaps a lot with what Aisha said already in his lecture, so that's not too bad. And part two was going to be about some work I've been doing with Emmanuel Diaconescu and Jeff Harvey about how in boundary string field theory, in the boundary string field theory viewpoint of D9 bar annihilation into lower dimensional brains, one can understand some things about, one can understand some things about the Vesemino term on D brains, starting with the papers of Krauss and Larson and Takayanagi et al. Also, this suggests an interesting model for differential K theory related to, I'm sure, various things that Dan Fried was talking about last week.
Questions. Let's thank Greg for his great.